Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. We're pleased that you're listening this morning. In this hour of Focus, we'll be talking with the founder of an innovative program that was set up to try to provide permanent homes for some of the children in foster care in this state that probably wouldn't go back to the homes that they came from and might not be adopted, or at least wouldn't face very good chances of adoption. It's called Hope for the Children, and it is based on part of what was the old Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul. And our guest with the program is the founder. Her name is Brenda Ehart. She's a former psychology professor at the University of Illinois. She has, in fact, been with us before on this program, but not in a long time. I think for a long time studied the issue of foster care in the state and had some concerns about some kids and their unmet needs. And this program, which she developed and which is has generated a lot of interest other places around the country, is what she came up with to try to deal with it. We'll talk about how it is it got started and how it's working, and take questions that you might have. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess maybe the place to start would be to talk a little bit about foster care and the problems that you identified with foster care. And it's not just, I'm sure, not just an Illinois problem, but it's a national problem. What was wrong with the system that you wanted to try to fix?
Well, there, as I'm sure your listeners know, there's a lot of problems with our foster care system nationwide today. But about 5 or 6 years ago, when I really began to pursue this dream of hope for the children in earnest, we had 1,000 children a month coming into care in the state of Illinois. And that number just overwhelmed me. I mean, I just couldn't imagine that many kids every month coming into care. In addition to that, I had studied here at the university for several years families adopting older kids that had been in the foster care system, and those adoptions weren't working. And they weren't working primarily because the families needed just a tremendous amount of support and education. And so I wanted to do something to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. So then how did this particular idea get into your head? Of actually sort of deliberately trying to create a community, helping people with their housing, and also this idea, and we'll talk about it some more, but this idea that you really wanted to make it multi-ethnic, multi-generational, that you were really engineering a community from the ground up.
Well, I was doing that, and I was doing it with the help of an awful lot of wonderful people in this community. But I will tell you, we didn't know we were doing that at the time. We sort of did it piecemeal. Had we known we were really creating a community, we probably would have been absolutely terrified and maybe not gone ahead. But sometimes ignorance is bliss. So we really started with the idea that we needed, that we wanted children that really probably were not going to go home, nor were they in all likelihood going to be adopted. For example, a sibling group of 3 or 4 children who all had behavioral problems or other kinds of special needs. So we wanted to target those children. We wanted them to be raised in homes as similar to the way we were all raising our children as possible. And so that's what we really started with. And we wanted those families to be pretty close together to each other geographically so they could support each other and so we could be there or get a trained staff to help support them as well. So that was the shell, was to have 12 or 13 homes in a proximity to each other where they would then take these children and raise these children as their own, adopt them if they became legally free for adoption.
So it looked like was the best opportunity or the best place to do that was to use part of the old Air Force Base?
Well, I spent, as did some other people in this community, probably 2 years just talking to everybody. I could probably tell you every piece of farmland that was for sale within a 30-mile radius of Champaign in about 1992. But anyway, that eventually led to somebody calling me up and saying that the base was closing and that there was was housing there. I had never been on the base, I'm ashamed to say. And so when I went up to see the housing and the base, we knew that. We knew that that's what we wanted. Mm.
And this involved some negotiations with the Department of Defense?
Some is quite a word here.
Prolonged?
It was probably a good 18 months of phone calls back and forth. It was absolutely incredible. And finally took a fax to the White House to say, you came in, President Clinton. We changed administrations, by the way. We started out with President Bush and then went into President Clinton. So a lot of people we were working with also changed during that time. But finally had to go to President Clinton and say, you know, you came in promising to end gridlock. This is gridlock. Now let's get it stopped. And 2 weeks later, we were sitting down at the negotiating table. So,
Why was it such a problem? You'd think if, you know, they had this property that and if they could find some use for it and somebody was willing to give them some money, they figure, well, why not? Other than it would have just stood empty if
it was total bureaucracy. They they didn't have anything in writing for a not how to negotiate with a not-for-profit for surplus military housing. So if you were a developer, it was all laid out, A, B, C, follow it, and, you know, in a matter of months, you'll get the housing. But they didn't have that laid out for us, and no one was willing to say, okay, you know, we've got to do this. No one ever said to me in that 18 months, this is a stupid idea, we don't think you should do it, not one person. But they just, no one was willing to say, okay, we've got to move ahead and do this.
So what? How much did you have to do in terms of remodeling of the buildings that the folks were going to live
in? We really didn't have to do very much. The base housing at Chanute, which was a very large training base, really had excellent housing. And so we had to, for our families who are adopting up to four children, plus they came in, most of our families came in with two or three kids. So they're large families of six, seven kids. We took duplexes, about 1,500 square feet duplexes, and knocked out the center wall and made those 3,000 square feet homes for them. We also have, we haven't talked about, we have 40 apartments of senior citizens up there who give us 6 hours a week of volunteer time for reduced rent. And in those apartments, those were, most of those were fourplexes, and we didn't do anything except put in carpeting, and a few of them we had to paint. So it wasn't a lot of work that we had to do.
Let me reintroduce our guest. We're talking this morning with Brenda Ehart. She is a developmental psychologist, was professor of psychology here at the University of Illinois for a number of years, and is the founder of a project called Hope for the Children, which exists on part of the old Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul, which is not very far away from where we're sitting right now. And it was something that she helped to develop and organize, she and a lot of other people as well, to try to provide homes, good homes, for some of the children who are in foster care in the state, who probably won't be adopted for a number of reasons. They probably won't be going back to their homes. And by all accounts, it's been pretty successful. We're talking about it, and if you have questions, you can call us 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, you said before, you know, I sort of made this observation about how you, interestingly enough, you ended up making this little multi-generational, multiracial community, and that really wasn't what you set out to do. How did the idea come of having the senior citizens apartments, and that in sort of in exchange for a lower rent, enlisting them in being a resource, not just sort of being surrogate grandparents, that's I guess a lot of what they do, but also be there, spend time with the kids, do some childcare stuff and so forth?
Well, once we had identified this housing at the base and said this is really what we want to create, this dream, they told us pretty quickly, the base redevelopment people, that there was no way we were going to get 13 houses, for example, or 15 houses, that we had to take a block. They segregated the housing up there in basically into subdivisions. And so we had to take this one piece, which was 84 housing units. And so a duplex would be two housing units. So we did not want a residential program where there were huge numbers of foster children. We wanted from the beginning diversity, both in terms of race and in terms of the legal status of children. And so the idea, it just came to me actually after meeting with some people who were working, Maggie Kuhn, in fact, who was the founder of Great Panthers. And I heard her speak in Philadelphia, and on the way home on the plane, I said, that's it. We'll fill the rest of that housing with seniors. And then the rest just came in terms of giving them reduced rent for giving us volunteer time, which really has turned out to be one of the absolutely most exciting and, I think, successful pieces of this program.
So the families who move in or who moved in, some of them had their own children.
Correct.
And they also were acting as foster parents. How did the foster kids, which they came to care for, get together with them? I mean, did you put them together?
In almost all cases, we get referrals for the children, and then we work with our families to place those children. And, you know, we target only this population of kids that it really looks like they won't go home. The mom's severely mentally ill. She's had 7 years in and out of treatment, four other kids taken away from her, et cetera, and is on drugs. I mean, that's probably 60% of our moms fit that profile. And so they are not going to be able to take care of yet this other child or the sibling group that might be referred to us. So that's how we get most of our children. And then we match them up. Work with our families to match those children with the families.
And the families, these are people who have experience being foster parents? This would not be their first time out, or would it be in some cases?
It really depends. It really depends. What's most important to us is that they have a real sense of parenting. I think everybody we've hired has been a parent. There might be an exception there that I'm forgetting, but I think they've all, you know, parented some. Foster parents, we have some that are foster parents. We have many that have never done foster care, because there really is a difference between what we call hope care and foster care. We're looking to not move these children anymore. You know, we see hope as really a last stop.
Uh-huh. Well, is the thought your expectation maybe, or these folks' expectation, that actually they will adopt these children?
Yes. We do have to work, and there is a new movement around the country now, which was what we've been doing. We do have to work to return these children home. I mean, they come to us with a return home goal. It's really the only option they have, pretty much the only option they have in the state of Illinois. In other states, there's some other options. So we do have to work with DCFS, Department of Children and Family Services, as well as with the courts to, you know, whatever they say families have to do, birth families have to do, we work very closely with them to do that. But at the same time, then, we really document thoroughly whether or not the parents have done what the court's requesting, so that they can make a decision to either send these kids home, which does not happen very often because of the kinds of kids that we take in, or they go to termination of parental rights.
Mm-hmm. What do the families get out of all of this?
Our families get a lot. One thing they get, which you might not think of, but of course is very obvious, is an awful lot of work. I mean, raising four of these children with the backgrounds that these kids have, and we might talk about that in a few minutes, is very, very difficult work, physically, emotionally, intellectually. So they might, you know, your listeners and our families might not think of that when they're coming in, or somebody that's interested in this program, but clearly, that's what they get. Now, in addition to that, we pay them a salary a year instead of so much per child, and they get their housing. And then our families get the support of a on-site staff. Our staff is there, and we have a therapist who lives right there, who is accessible to the families, for the children and for them. And we have all the seniors who do wonderful things. I mean, if a mom has to rush a child to the hospital, there's seniors there to pick the rest of the kids up from school, or to somebody to go with her to sit with a, maybe another preschool-age child in the waiting room while they take the other child in, all kinds of things. So that's very nice.
And how many people do you have living there today?
We have approximately 60 seniors. We have 45 households. I think it's 45. 13 families. We've got, I think, 30 children today that came to us through foster care. Plus, we have approximately another 20 children who live there that, you know, were either biological or adopted who came with our families. So it's really quite a community.
Yeah.
It's over 100 people.
Where does the money come from?
The money comes from three sources. The majority of our money, about 70%, comes from the state through foster care dollars. 20% comes from our rent from our seniors, because they do pay us rent, the seniors do. Mm-hmm. And another 5% comes from private donations.
You talk about the fact that the families who are caring for these children do receive a stipend. Now, foster parents do too. How does that compare with the amount of money that a foster parent would get that's supposed to go to the, you know, to help defray the cost of the maintenance and upkeep?
You know, it's hard to say. It's approximately the same, but they are actually employees of ours, and they have to pay taxes on the salary. We have a year-to-year contract with them, but as soon as they move in, we start paying them that salary. So that most of them, some of them might wait 6 months before they get a child. Some of them might have a sibling group of three within, you know, 6 weeks of moving up there. So that varies in terms of building their family, but they still get paid. And then, you know, as these children turn 18 or as they get adopted, that will change. But our idea was, we've got, I believe firmly, that we must start looking at children in foster care as having the exact same needs as, say, you know, your kids or my kids. And one of the I use that as a litmus test all the time and have for the last several years in making decisions up there, so that nobody pays me per day to raise my children. And I think it does something to the children and sometimes to parents if what we're trying to do is to create a relationship where these parents and kids are really made a lifelong commitment. In regular foster care, where the child is supposed to be there for a short period of time, it may make sense. But there's an awful lot of children out there for whom that's not the case today. The picture in foster care has changed dramatically in the last 10 to 15 years in terms of the children coming into care.
In what way?
I think approximately 15 years ago, the children coming into care, for the most part, were physically or sexually abused. You did not have the situation of drugs, especially maternal use of drugs. Today, the vast majority of children coming into care, in fact, most people will tell you it's 90% of the cases that come in are drug-related. I mean, that's part of the reason. And how that's manifested for our children, it seems to me, is in two ways. One, absolutely chronic neglect. So you see three-year-olds, you know, basically taking care of a six-month-old, you know, being responsible for getting whatever food they're going to get out of the refrigerator. I mean, just chronic neglect. In addition to that, the children we're seeing, at least at Hope, also come to us with having witnessed for their entire lives domestic violence and perhaps violence in the community as well, but really serious domestic violence as opposed to violence to themselves, which is what we had maybe 15 years ago. So these children come to us at ages 4, 5, 6, 7, most of them that we get, and that's their reality. Their reality is you solve problems by hitting each other, by swearing. I mean, the words that come out of a little four-year-old's mouth are just really quite incredible, can be. They truly don't know the concept of caring. They just don't know it. And that's quite a thing. to see, because we just expect that if that's the way we were raised and the way, you know, we raise our children.
Are there some children that might also, in addition to have various kinds of disabilities, developmental or physical sort of disabilities?
We have some children that have physical disabilities. If we could find the families, we could take more. I mean, our criteria, one of our criteria is that the children must be able to truly benefit by a family environment and by a public school situation. So if we get a child referred to us that clearly has such either physical problems or much more often behavioral emotional problems that they might need to be much more structured environment than a family could provide, then they wouldn't be appropriate for us. Our children come to us, many of our children come to us behind in school. As I said, a lot of our children are 5, 6, and 7. They come to us, they've never held a crayon. I mean, neglect is not only neglect in terms of physical neglect, emotional neglect. I mean, they've not been held. You think about having a baby and how much you just hold a baby and how much you interact when none of that's been there for 2 or 3 years, or what has been there has been within the environment of violence. It's something. So, but the other neglect is, you know, we just take it for granted that kids, by the time they're 5 these days, will begin to know their alphabet, you know, can begin to write their name perhaps. These kids haven't even held a crayon, so they really come to us behind academically and reading in those in that way as well. But not so much with low IQ, if that's, you know, if your listeners were thinking of something like that. And so our seniors, a lot of them, many of them are retired school teachers. They start right in tutoring these kids, and we're bringing the kids up.
Are there some other people in different parts of the country who are trying to do the, trying to get the same thing going and really are looking to you as a kind of a model?
There really has been an awful lot of interest. We, in about a year and a half ago, some of the national media picked up the story of Hope for the Children. And as a result of that, people have been reading about us or seeing us on television. And we have gotten requests for information and visitors from all over the United States. We also have, I can now tell you, Ronald McDonald House Charities has taken a serious interest in us and given us a multi-million dollar grant to replicate this around the country. So we've literally just started that in the last month, beginning that process.
Being a parent is tough work, you know. And if it's your own kids, it's tough work. But, it, you know, the I find it pretty scary. I guess that's why I'm not a parent. The idea of, though, of taking on a child who's really been through a lot of tough times, whether it's neglect or abuse, whatever, I mean, it just bumps up the scary quotient even that much more. And you really I'm sort of in awe of somebody who would be willing to do that. Do you find that the parents are really – do they know what they're getting into, or do they in some cases really not know, and do they suffer sort of a little shock at the beginning, or they really start to come to grips with what the needs of these children really are?
Well, you know, I think our families – I'm in awe of our families as well, I will tell you. It is incredibly hard work, and it certainly is not for everyone. The families that we have at Hope are people who really and truly love parenting, are good at parenting, and this is what they want to do, you know, and this is their career. And that's, in a sense, why we're paying them a salary as opposed to so much per child per day. Sometimes they get children and they're really, it just really isn't a match for a variety of reasons. But the nice thing about Hope is if that happens, and it hasn't happened very often, but when it does happen, so far there's been another family up there who has really taken a shine to this child. Mm-hmm. And so we can move the child. They aren't losing their surrogate grandparents. They aren't losing their neighborhood. They aren't losing their school. And all the families are still friends, you know, so that you can make these matches. So that's a real plus for this community program. But, you know, you take most of us think about becoming parents one at a time, newborns. A few of us have twins, but, you know, usually that's the norm is one at a time and they're newborns. Here we're talking at least half our families taking in a sibling group instead of one at a time, and also older kids. So it is tough. And I really believe that most of these situations would not have lasted any more than they did in my research, you know, 10 years ago, had we not had all the support to give these families. And they reach out for it, too, you know, through the seniors, et cetera. And then eventually, you know, it calms down. But any time you enter a new – something changes in a family, whether it's a birth or somebody leaves for college or there's a change – you know, there's a time of fluctuation, crisis, and unevenness. And so you've really got to weather that. And it's tough to do without support.
Yeah, and I suppose that the kids are kids whose experience has been that they have been moved around a lot.
Exactly.
And that I'm sure that they're looking for stability, but their experience hasn't, you know, given them probably much reason to believe that that kind of thing is possible. And they probably come into it with a lot of really defensiveness and sort of like with their guard up as if to say, yeah, okay, you prove it to me. You tell me this is, you know, this is going to be the genuine item here. It's going to be a family. Right. We're going to live here and it's going to be great. You just show me that that's really going to be like.
Well, that's exactly right. There's a lot of testing going on and there should be. And we try to help our families see that as normal, even though it's difficult to live with day in and day out. Most of our kids have been in life and have been in care an average of 72% of their lives. All of our children over the age of 18 months have been in care an average of 72% of their lives. I think they've had an average of 3.4 moves. I'm not exactly sure in that stat. So they've been around and they do test. In part, what really helps, besides having the seniors in there and some of our staff, is having the therapist there. 94% of our kids are seeing therapists. And I think maybe another piece that we aren't as aware of is also the fact that they're coming into a community where they aren't the only ones that have had all these moves and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it's quite possible that some of the older children actually really help the younger children and say, you know, you aren't alone here. And this is a good place. Hang in there or whatever. You know, help them get through it.
Mm. How in the state of Illinois, in foster care, how many children are there now that are the kind of kids that we're talking about?
Illinois has approximately 50,000 children in care. That number seems to have stabilized finally in the last couple of years, even though it's still an extremely high number. And that's 10% of all kids in the country. There's 500,000 nationwide and 50,000 of them in Illinois. And nobody really knows the answer to that question. I would argue that it's probably 40%. The national figure that is always given nationwide is a third of all kids. I think it's a little higher in Illinois.
Hmm. So what happens to them? Do they just sort of get bumped around until they get old enough so that theoretically in the eyes of the law in the state they're adults and then we just say, see ya, good luck?
Well, that certainly happens to some children. They age out of the system. We're really trying to stop that. They spend a long time going through the court system, and that's got to change and is changing, both in Illinois and nationwide. There's federal legislation right now that's being introduced in Washington, as well as we just passed legislation in the state of Illinois, which is going to speed up the process of getting kids through the legal system and towards termination in cases where that really should happen, where before it's been a very long, prolonged process of getting them through the court system.
Mm-hmm. And that's just that has an ominous sort of sound to it. But basically what we're talking about there is making the determination that their parents cannot take care
Correct.
Of them. So we're just going to close the book on that, and we're going to say we need to find a permanent
Right.
home for these children.
I would like – I guess I have – I mean, I think that's sorely needed. But at the same time, you don't want to do that in cases where the kids do need to go back home. Mm-hmm. And so my worry about this legislation, while I applaud it on the one hand, on the other hand, we have a tendency in this country to sort of get on bandwagons, and I'm afraid where we have shifted so much to keeping kids in care with the chance that they will go home, you know, for years, I'm afraid we might swing back the other way where we take all these kids and terminate zip, 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 and then we'll be in, you know, just as bad a situation. Because clearly, if children can go home in a reasonable time, that's what's to birth families. That's really what's in their best interest. But there are clearly many, many, many cases where they just aren't going to be able to go home to situations where they can be nurtured and cared for properly. And those are the ones that we must get to termination.
We have a caller to bring into the conversation. Other people are welcome if you'd like to call in. Questions, comments, of course, you're welcome. 333-9455. And we also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. We have a caller here in Urbana. Line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I had a couple comments. One is, it sounds like a wonderful program, and you have such energy, and you sound so positive, and that's so wonderful. I have a student. I had a student. I teach at Eastern Illinois University. I had a student who did her thesis on foster care, and what she did was a qualitative study interviewing couples who had chosen to be foster care parents. And what she was looking at was the difference between many media representations of foster care, which tend to be highly negative, versus sort of taking a look at interpersonal sources and how these people made decisions about becoming foster care parents. And I guess that one comment that I have is that these people were very positive. And I had another student whose family had taken in a number of kids under foster care, and they talked about the great satisfaction they got from knowing that they were helping a child, that they were making a difference in a child's life. And I guess I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about the positive aspects of foster care. It is obviously a tremendous amount of work, and the kids that you're dealing with are obviously in great need, and so it's going to have difficulties. But one of her conclusions was that the media has not represented foster care in such a way that people are likely to say, gee, maybe I'll think about doing that kind of thing. And so I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the positive aspects for the parents and the grandparents. And then I have another question, and that is, what can we do, those of us who are not going to take children in, are there things that we could do to help your program?
Thank you for those comments. Foster care, clearly, most of the people that go into foster care are people who go into it because they really want to do something positive for children, and they really also have to really like children and parenting because, as I said before, it's, you know, some of the most challenging work that I can think of. My hat goes off to those families. I think foster families, I think the media has not portrayed them correctly, in part because the media tends to pick up, as they were doing in this state right now, you know, sensational cases. Or situations where somebody might be just doing it for the money or whatever, but those, I think, are very rare. I think foster families, the real difficulty, in addition to just, you know, raising these children, which is hard work, I think is working with the foster care system where they become attached to children or feel that children maybe shouldn't go back home or whatever, and I think that's got to be very, very difficult on families. And I know we had several people who interviewed for Hope for the Children, which isn't, as you've probably picked up, traditional foster care, because we're looking for the kids where it's going to be a last stop, where traditional foster care is for these kids to go back home. What was I going to say about that? I lost my train of thought, I think, on that. Oh, I know what I was going to say is that we had families that said, we don't want to do traditional foster care anymore because we want these kids and we want to, you know, be able to raise these children when they can't go back home. So those are some of the families that are more interested in our program versus regular foster care, which I would encourage, you know, anyone to do if they know what they're getting into. But it's difficult. It's difficult work. In terms of what people can do to help our program, I guess what I would encourage you to do is call the program, which is 893-HOPE. That's our phone number in Rantoul, area code 217, and just ask for information. We do have a lot of volunteers because of our seniors. We're doing quite a bit with the university right now. But, you know, I'm always interested, as are some of the rest of the staff, in talking to individuals if they have ideas.
Okay.
I work with several students. As you can imagine, a million questions are generated on a day-to-day basis up there related to our children, related to foster care, related to policy. And so I do thoroughly enjoy working with students, and especially if they can help us and we can help them to address some of those questions in policy.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. We have an internship program. Maybe I'll call and find out if there are opportunities for other students who would be interested.
Great. Thanks. Well, I would appreciate that.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
We have about 10 minutes left, and we are speaking with Brenda Ehart, former psychology professor here at University of Illinois, who is the founder of Hope for the Children in Rantoul, on part of the old Air Force Base there, Chinook Base, which, as we've explained, the idea being to try to provide some permanent homes for kids who are in foster care but are not likely to go back home and not likely to be adopted. Questions, comments are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. It seems really, you know, there may indeed be some people who have gone into foster care to make money, but, you know, when you think about how much money you get and how hard the work is, I think there are probably a lot easier ways to make money. I'm sure that folks just don't, you know, they do it because they have this really sincere wish to try to.
And I think one of the reasons that we have such a dearth of foster homes today, which is the case, is because this is such incredibly hard work, and as well as emotionally exhausting. And so there's many, many more opportunities out there today that don't that don't require that. And so, you know, it seems to me. Well, there's just a lot of people that might have done this in the past that aren't going to do it today because there's other options for them. And it's really too bad because we really do need good foster parents, and the children need it. And the satisfaction you can get from that can be tremendous, but you have to have the personality to want to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure it must also be difficult to see that your kids go, because I'm sure that you become attached to them if they stay with you long enough. And that then they head out the door, and you sort of wonder, well, you know, how's it going to go with them? And maybe you never really know.
Well, one of the things in my sort of ideal world that I would like to see, and one of the things that we try to do at Hope, have had some success with, is I don't think it's good for children, and that's clearly the bottom line, what's good for children, to have it either be the foster parents or the birth parents. You know, if we could develop a system where there could be some kind of continuum of care, and when the kids, if they do go back home, the foster parents are still a part of that and maybe can help the birth parents. And I know there are some programs just being started like that. We have had some children whose parental rights have been terminated, and we are still, our Hope parents are still very involved with those birth parents and will be even after the children are adopted, which apparently is fairly revolutionary. But if you take older children, and older I mean again 6, 7, and 8, they have a long history and memory with these birth parents. And you can't, it's a part of these children, and you cannot just say that's over and they're no longer a part of you, because they really are. And we've talked a little bit about how the media may give foster parents a bad rap. It's also very easy, I think, to think about the birth parents as in a very negative way. And in fact, most of these birth parents truly do love these kids and are victims themselves. You know, they are victims in having been abused themselves, having been neglected, et cetera. And so I think for the sake of the children, that the more we can work and show respect for the birth parents and their importance in their children's lives, the better it's going to be for everyone. I think foster parents are doing more of that, and we certainly are at Hope.
Are you at capacity, your capacity now, or could you have more people living there? Do you have space for more people?
We probably have space for another couple and maybe another single parent. And we will be taking in probably 20 more children approximately, and then that will be it, unless somebody, a family. We do have some turnover there, which is natural in any community, and that's all right. You know, if a family finds a better job or moves out of state, as long as they take the kids with them. So we may always, you know, we may always have an opening, but we're pretty, at this point, we're pretty close to full in terms of our parents.
Here's the caller in Kankakee County. We'll talk with them on line 4. Hello.
Yes, I'm calling from Kankakee County. We've just recently, my wife and I just recently became foster parents, and through Catholic Charities, we have welcomed into our home two siblings, sisters, and they are teenagers, and they are both ready to be adopted, and so we're following on that track. I just want to say that as hard as work as it is extremely rewarding, and our two daughters have been a blessing to us, and we look forward to continuing in their care. And I commend you and your organization for helping foster children, especially older ones, as our girls, to find a permanent home and certainly a place that they can call home.
How long have you had these girls?
They've been with us since January of this year.
Wow. Well, I applaud you.
Well,
adopting two teenagers is, I wish you the very, very best, and those girls are very lucky.
Thank you.
I'm sure.
That's how I feel. We are getting good support from our chapter of Catholic Charities.
Great.
And good support from our church. So we are well on our way to towards adopting them.
You know, I think you said something that we're learning at Hope that I didn't really think about when we first started this program about 4 years ago, and that is it really does take a community to help families. I mean, you're talking about your church and you're talking about your agency helping you. These children are very have suffered a lot of trauma.
Yes.
One of my students has equated them with some of the children that were caught in the war in Bosnia. And how she's studying she's looking at Hope as a community and the kinds of supports for families and the children, and taking that back to Bosnia and looking at how maybe you can bring communities back together to support those children, which is really kind of an intriguing idea.
Well,
but these are traumatized children, and it takes, you know, all the goodwill in the world is you need it, but you also need the support of these wonderful people that are helping you.
One thing I have found out is that they are not just objects of our care, but they have taught us a great deal about resiliency and about coping
right.
mechanisms, some of which have been healthy and some of which have been unhealthy, but they have so much to teach us as a family and as a community about surviving and about sticking together. Like I said, these two are siblings.
Yeah,
it really is quite rewarding to be a part of their lives.
Well, that's absolutely great. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
And yeah, and I'm glad of the call too, because one wouldn't want to, you know, constantly stress the difficulty
exactly.
of the whole thing, and as if to imply that the only parties here that got anything out of it were the children. I'm sure that people who are foster parents would echo the experiences of this man and say, you know, that they indeed got an awful lot out of it.
That's exactly right. And if you talk with our parents and our seniors at Hope, they will tell you the same thing. I mean, they are in it because they get an awful lot back as well.
Mm-hmm. How, you know, as time goes by, I guess I wonder what you've see as the long-term possibility for the community, and particularly if you a particular family has children, and eventually the children, I guess, grow up and they want to have families of their own or go out to pursue other goals. You know, what does then that those parents they go on to something else? They move into the senior citizens' housing.
That's exactly
new
what
people
they do,
come
David.
In?
In my vision, this is a vision because it hasn't happened yet. you know, I envision these people after they've raised these families of six or seven children, which is the total number, moving across the street into the apartments and mentoring the new families that come in. And I see, just like I go back to where I was raised in Western New York to visit my parent, my mother, I see these kids coming back to Hope Meadows, and that's their home base when they're 18, when they're 28, and when they're 48. Mm.
It's really interesting. I suppose some people would want to say that it was utopian and somehow, I don't. Where are the problems? I mean, what really still, you know, where are the wrinkles that still somehow need to be ironed out, or are there any?
Well, I think you're always going to, I guess that depends how you define problems, and I think it could be very easy to, on a day-to-day basis, get discouraged because this child's having a problem this day and you thought you just had it solved, or, you know, something's going on with that parent or whatever. On the other hand, when you look at this as a community and you look at it as human beings and you look at these children with their backgrounds, those things are actually normal. I mean, you know, that there's some kinds of problems, whatever those problems might be. Kids hitting each other, maybe somebody not supervising a child and some neighbor says something about it. But, you know, I grew up in a very tiny community where that same thing went on. You know, if I was out and somebody thought I shouldn't be, you better believe my parents were told about it. Okay. So those kinds of things are going to happen in a small community. We're 22 acres. So people see what's going on, but it's pretty much, we really do strive to make it as normal a community as possible. And this, you know, I guess one of the situations that's come to mind now is our families are being paid to stay home to raise these kids. And then you get this situation of your public life versus your private life. And, you know, what I do professionally, for example, at the university or my job at Hope, I don't want my private life to overlap very much with that. You know, we may have some friends or we may go to a few parties or whatever, but, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I want my private life and I want then my professional and my public life. And there it's the same thing. So that's something I think that's taking both our families and our staff some time to work that out.
Well,
that's highly unusual.
For being here.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Brenda Ehart from Hope for the Children in Rantoul.